This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyer Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Seth, trusting the texters with factual stuff is always a, you know, can be a dicey proposition, but I'll believe this texter when I read this. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Young Miami was at a couple Texans games last year. She was supposedly seeing Stephon Diggs.
Oh, okay. So that's how she had her intel on CJ Stroud being perhaps too, maybe a little too religious for her tastes or likings.
Yeah.
Or she didn't want to corrupt a young and innocent CJ Stroud.
Yeah.
You know what I like about that?
Hmm.
I like that maybe if indeed she was dating Stephon Diggs and she had conversations with Stephon about CJ Stroud, maybe Stephon saying like, yeah, boy, the kid's just, he's as pure as the driven snow. And I know about snow because I played in Buffalo. Let's get back to talking about me.
Yes. someone said, imagine Young Miami dating Sam Darnold. Oh, dude, Sam Darnold dating a female rapper. I would watch that reality show for sure.
She would lay down the law with him.
Oh,
or Sam Darnold. There'd be all kinds of shots of him walking in behind her, going into an awards show, carrying her purse, three purses and everything else that he had to do. And then her telling him to shut his hoe ass up when he objected to her flirting with Future or something.
Yep,
yeah.
Exactly. All right, mock draft injection time. We do it 7:45 every day until draft time. It's gotten a little more interesting with the Texans kind of fiddling around with the offensive line, more than fiddling around with the offensive line this offseason. I mean, they've damn near tore it down, and they're trying to build it back up now. But the twists and turns along the way that felt like it would affect how the Texans look at the draft probably were the Laremy Tunsil trade, where offensive line shoots way to the top of the list of needs. And then with signing Cam Robinson this week, I don't know that it should really change how they look at it. But in the short term, if the short term was a big deal to them, it's probably slightly less of a big deal with Cam Robinson, so we'll see. But this one, Seth, is NFL.com. Mike Band is the name of the mock drafter here. And he says this about his approach. So this is what we should know when we play who he has the Texans taking here in a minute or so. My approach is research-driven. I blend insider reports, team needs, scheme fits, apparent organizational philosophy, and odds to connect dots and predict what each club's decision makers might do when they're on the clock. So he has a lot of different elements that go into how he does this. He's a next-gen stats guy. Goes on to brag a little bit. My track record speaks for itself. Over the last 5 years, I've ranked 5th in overall accuracy among 75 draft experts, and he hyperlinked 5th in overall accuracy to take you to the article that shows this.
Yeah. Okay?
Including a second-place finish among 172 experts a year ago. So
ooh,
last year he was the
he's getting
second
better.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Oh. In 2009, he had the most accurate mock draft on record at the time. While connecting every dot in a first round mock is impossible, matching players with teams ahead of draft night is very much within reach. So here we go, 5 weeks out from the draft.
Yeah.
We're 5 weeks from yesterday.
Listen, fella, there was a stretch of time, too, when people thought Colin Coward was some kind of a magician when it came to making picks because he had a good run. All right?
Yeah.
All right? Yeah.
Like putting him in his place.
Let's give it another 5 years, Mike Band. But that's when you become a real draft expert.
That's right.
When you always, yes, you very much highlight when your mock draft was right. When it wasn't right, you say everybody knows that, like, it's not about the actual prediction. It's about just the process of it all.
That's
everybody
right.
knows that.
No caveat it. All right, so who's he got the Texans taking here with the 25th pick? With the 25th pick in the Mike Band, Braggy, Next Gen Stats, NFL.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Mecca Abuka, wide receiver, Ohio State. Now, here's what's interesting about what he says. With Tank Dell's late season injury creating uncertainty at receiver, the Texans select Abuka to serve as an immediate playmaker for their young quarterback. Okay. Polished as a route runner, dangerous after the catch, the Ohio State product can thrive in the slot or as a Z receiver opposite Nico Collins. Even with Laramie Tunsil gone, Houston believes Titus Howard can solidify left tackle, freeing them to focus on the skill group early and the interior O-line on day two. This was dropped yesterday afternoon, so no mention. I thought it was interesting. No mention of Cam Robinson at left tackle. He's talking about Titus Howard at left tackle. Thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's I guess I'm a little surprised when people speak with complete confidence about where Titus Howard will play next year. And a lot of times it's people that I think are really smart people, and yet some of those smart people have differing opinions. I think it's wide open right now. I think that there's no way you can put Cam Robinson in as the day one starter at left tackle. I think a lot of it hinges on what they feel about the draft class, and if they draft a guy in the first round, if he's a guard or a tackle, how does he look during training camp? How do they feel about Blake Fisher as training camp progresses? So there's a lot of variables there, and it could look any one of five different configurations come day one. Ibuka, I think that really the signing of Cam Robinson and the signing of like the two veteran offensive guards so far, it puts you in a position where you don't feel like there's a glaring, oh, what the hell are we going to do situation if you had to go out and play a game with those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows you to maybe more take best player available. Ibuka, at this point, I wonder if they look at it, and there's a lot to like on the leadership side of things, on the football IQ side of things, all of those things. But when it comes to just pure, unadulterated athleticism and quickness, does he have the same upside that some of the other guys have? And they already, I don't want to get too married to the definition of a slot receiver or anything. I think Ibuka can play slot, he can play outside. Same way Christian Kirk can play slot and play outside. But I wonder if they look at him more as a guy that would be a really good find in the second round. But when you're trying to look for extreme upside in the first round, I don't know if Ibuka's the guy they
If Golden and Ibuka are there, I'll be a little disappointed if they take Ibuka over Matthew Golden from Texas.
Yeah, and I think the comparison a lot of people bring up, which I think is fair, but it's almost so loaded that I don't want to use it, but they'll say, okay, is this just a better version of John Metchie? He's not necessarily a guy that has great short area quickness and twitch and everything, but he's a good guy and he competes and he does all those things the right way. And I think that's got a little bit of a sour taste in their mouth given our high expectations of John Metchie. But I tend to agree with him a little bit. I think that D'Amico wants guys who can really separate, and route running is a lot to do with that, but at the NFL level it's route running plus twitchiness, and I just don't know if that's what I don't think that Ibuka is good enough at that side of it to set him apart from if Tyler Booker, the guard, is there at that point, or if Matthew Golden is there at that point. I think that they go with guys who are a little bit more classic first-round prospects.
Yeah, I can see that. This Mike Band, who's mock drafted, has the Chiefs trading up to 24 right in front of the Texans to take Josh Simmons, who we've spent a ton of time on over the last few days in this segment. So maybe, you know, in his world, maybe he feels like the Chiefs need offensive line help, right?
Yeah.
And that
they
feel like the Texans are a team where Josh Simmons could land in this world that we're in. That would be interesting if somebody jumped right in front of the Texans to take a guy at a position of need for the Texans.
And so this is what's interesting to watch on draft day or draft weekend is that Nick talks continuously about wanting to find a band of players where you've got a certain group of guys that have a good grade and you think that, okay, we take any one of these three or four guys, we'd feel pretty good about it at this position. He doesn't fall in love with individuals, but it's going to be interesting as the draft unfolds. If you start to see a couple of offensive linemen start to drop, if and all of a sudden it looks like, oh, there's a band of offensive linemen available right now, if Nick makes a move at that point, that where he can, okay, he's taking the best player available, but he maneuvered to get to a spot where the best player available was an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
I think that's what I'm anticipating. If I had to handicap it, I think Nick moves up in the first round, but it's not an overly aggressive one. It's up into the 20 spot or something, to where a guy's that really could have been top 15 picks have started to slide, and he likes being right there.
It's going to be fun, man. It's going to be a fun draft night, a fun night one, for sure. Someone's asking on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line, is Booker still available in this draft when we pick Abuka? He actually is. He's still available in this draft. Tyler Booker ends up going three picks later to the Detroit Lions.
Okay, so if I have to choose between Emeka Abuka, a wide receiver, and Tyler Booker, an offensive guard, if one of the holdups with either of those guys, a wide receiver and a guard, is that they don't test all that well, or they're not as athletic or as fast as the other guys, give me the guard all day long.
Yes.
Because it's a lot easier to overcome average athleticism at guard. You can overcome that with technique. You can overcome that with intelligence. You can overcome that a million different ways at guard. It's a lot harder at wide receiver.
Wide receiver, you're just a guy who can't get open. if that's the case.
He runs immaculate routes.
Yeah.
Especially when you consider the fact that he's got a defensive back attached
draped
to him the whole time.
Yes. Yeah.
With his hand, defensive back has his hand delicately placed on his hip the entire time.
And he still runs just where you want him to go.
Yeah.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Hi, Payne and Pendergast with you into the 8 o'clock hour we go. Text page, Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, 713-572-4610 if you want to weigh in on anything that we've been discussing this morning. Derek Stingley Jr. signed his big deal this week, met with the media on Wednesday. Shortly after that, he sat down with John Harris and Mark Vandermeer on Texans All Access. Really good conversation. You can find it. I'm guessing it's up on YouTube, but you can certainly find it at HoustonTexans.com. Good. It's up
I apologize. Yeah. Never mind.
Oh, okay. Is it up on
usually YouTube? It is. I was thinking about the press conference itself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, usually Texans All Access is up on YouTube.
Yeah, usually it is. Yeah. You can go find it. It's a good full conversation. Here was Derek Stingley Jr. talking about setting the standard here in Houston.
Well, really, like you said, Nico was already here doing all that. So, like, that standard is already set. So, I mean, I was just trying to keep up with how things operate around here. And hopefully more people just do that on a consistent basis.
Hopefully more people.
Oh, on a more consistent basis.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
A little bit of an edge there.
Yeah.
They almost went into kind of Nick Caserio mode almost. On a more consistent basis. Yes. I liked in the press conference what Stingley had said was that, you know, the team doesn't try to ask him to be somebody he's not, and that a lot of his leadership he thinks just comes from by setting an example of a guy that works really hard. You end up getting rewarded for it, and then being a good teammate. And being the teammate part, that's a fun one, and it's a little bit loaded here in Houston because of that era when Bill O'Brien first got here and almost every player was answering every question, I'm just trying to be the best teammate I can be. It was funny, especially with Arian Foster when he did it and he would only answer questions that way. But that was when it felt very much like Bill O'Brien was going to be heavy-handedly tell you that this is what you care about. You're going to care about the team. It's a lot better and it's a lot more fun when it comes from the players themselves. And certainly D'Amico talks about being a good teammate and all that stuff in his team meetings. But you got to have the right kind of guys that really feel that way. And it does feel in the defensive back meeting room that they've got the right kind of esprit de corps and respect for each other. That's when you get a synergistic effect almost, because guys are really communicating really well. And I thought the Texans back in 2011 and in that era where the defensive backs were playing very well, I was really impressed the first time I came back to Houston and got back out and watched those guys practice at how tight-knit the defensive backs were and how they really communicated really well. I think this defensive back room is, on the sum total of it all, more talented than that group from back then.
Yeah.
But also they need to have that that mature ability to communicate really effectively. Yep. I think they're on their way to having that.
I agree. Here was Derek Stingley Jr. They asked him about, this is something he didn't get asked about in the press conference, and it's probably a pretty underrated part of his game. He's a pretty good tackler. On his run defense and where that part of his game comes from.
Once I got into college, my defensive back coach, Corey Raymond, he would always say, y'all got to tackle. Y'all got to know how to tackle. Come yep. down, make a tackle. You hit with this shoulder, this foot forward. And he would just say that. And we would kind of look at him like, why? Like, you know, like, what's the point of right. us really getting in there and tackling? But, I mean, it turned out that, I mean, to be a better corner, you got to show up in the run. Like, you got to be reliable, or else they're just going to run the ball at you 30 times a game, and that you're not going to help the team if you can't make the tackle. So.
Go find me a clip of Jalen Ramsey saying anything close to that.
Yeah, exactly.
Jalen Ramsey has the Deion disease of thinking of himself as just like he's out there to cover people and nothing more. Except at least Deion was a little bit smaller, whereas Jalen Ramsey looks big. Like he should be able to tackle.
Yeah.
My most encouraging moment for Stingley when he was a young player was when they were playing the Titans. And Derrick Henry in the first matchup versus the Titans, it was one of those years where they played him twice in 3 weeks. There was a play where Derrick Stingley, really his responsibility should have been to set the edge, force the play inside. A lot of times as a cornerback, you've got the force. That means like you got to turn the play back inside. If you're not responsible for making the tackle, be sure you turn the play back inside. And he screwed it up. This was either his rookie year or his second year. And it was like a classic. Like it looked like he was a little uncertain himself of how to operate it. And then 2 weeks later, they played the Titans again, and he just sold out. And just, like whatever he did, he was going to force the play back inwards, back inside. But then he also made the play. He destroyed the guy who was trying to block him. And then he tackled Derrick freaking Henry. And that's when I saw, okay, there's something here, because there's a coachability element that he learned from. He got the coaching on it a couple weeks ago. He knew the game plan this week, and he not only held the force, but he actually made the actual play, which is above and beyond what you expect a cornerback to do on that side. And that's right. That was the first moment where I was like, okay, yeah, he really might. This is a kid that might really put it all together.
That was at the end of his second year, because that's when they played the Titans. They played with Case Keenum in Nashville in Week 15.
Yeah,
and then they played in the game where CJ came back from the concussion here in Week 17. So you're right. It was 2 weeks apart. It was at the end of the 2023 season where that. And I remember exactly what you're talking. I remember talking about it on this show. I remember exactly what you're talking about. All right, so John Harris has a favorite play. This actually wound up being, I think we did a poll of Texan fans of their favorite offensive and defensive plays of the year, and I think this one won the favorite defensive play of the year in a landslide. I think it won by a wide margin. This was Derek Stingley Jr.'s second interception of Tua Tagovailoa in the win over Miami.
Third down and 5 at the Houston 20. Tua in the gun. Here's the snap. Tua, quick fire, right side, and intercepted by Stingley. He's got it across the 15 and wrestled out of bounds by Hill. Derek Stingley Jr., the INT. He turns back Miami. Okay, what a takeaway for the Texans. They've got the rock in a 20-12 lead with 10:26 to go in the fourth.
Yeah, that's not the right one. I think that one, that's not on you, Ben. That got attached to a show email from yesterday from somebody else. That was the first interception. It's nice when you have the wrong interception. That was the second interception, the one where he yanked the ball out of Tyreek Hill. And Texan fans know what I'm talking about. We don't need the highlight.
Yeah, no, that one was a really that the fact. You know what? I was going down and I was watching that play. I had to edit it for something, and at various still frames in that interception. There's no way in hell you think Stingley's going to have that interception.
Mm-hmm.
It was an underthrown ball. So, you know, if it was thrown with a little bit more loft, that's a reception by Tyreek Hill. But it was a genuine 50-50 ball, or maybe like a 70-30 ball for Stephon Diggs. But Stingley just, I think...
Tyreek Hill, you mean, yeah.
For Tyreek Hill. Yeah. I think Stingley, because his ball tracking is so good, it wasn't like Stingley was actually, it wasn't like he was beat so bad and that's why he needed an underthrow ball to catch it. He timed the jump and tracked the ball just perfectly.
Yep.
And that's the thing that he does that has so many people when he was a younger guy saying, oh, maybe he should play wide receiver. It's three notches above almost anything else you see from other defensive backs.
Derek Stingley Jr. does not say much, but when we asked him about those interceptions on the postgame show, he gave a really detailed breakdown where I'm sitting here listening. I'm going, this dude is smart. Like, he is very smart, and he broke down the interception that you just described, Seth, against Tyreek Hill on Texans All Access with John and Mark 2 days ago.
On that play, I think it was either a play before or the play or two plays before that. He took an outside release and ran a dig, and he caught the ball for a first down. And the way he ran the route, it was kind of weird. Like, you're not gonna see nobody else run that. How he runs it. So, all right. Anyway, so that's beforehand.
So that set it up in your brain of that set something up.
Right. And then either the next play or two plays after he caught that pass, it was kind of like the shot area going into the field. And I just had a thought in my mind that he wasn't going to try to just run past me right here, even though he could have, because we was in single high. They had a lot of field to work with, to like a front pylon throw or back pylon, whichever one they wanted. But he took the release, and he stayed kind of vertical off his first couple steps. And then when he was running, like, he wasn't – like, Tyreek, he has a specific type of run and how he looks when he's running. I just had a feeling that he was about to break, and then I just kind of locked in on his hip. And then once he turned, I turned and looked for the ball.
That's the nuance that goes into being a really good cover corner. I've told you this a bunch of times. I really wish more cornerbacks were color commentators after they're done, because I guess the only problem might be that some of them, because they're so detailed and that stuff like that, that they don't have the time to really explain all of that during a game. But they understand the game, the passing game, on such a high level, more so than, and in some respects, more so than quarterbacks do, because they understand the nuances of the route running so well. And that's kind of like the football nerdiness side of Derek Stingley that you would never know from watching press conferences or anything. But you said it yesterday, when he breaks down the plays, it's really fun to listen to him talk. Because he does that part of it. He does that part of it really, really well. The other part about cornerbacks, when you hear guys talk that way, it's the confidence that it takes to kind of have hunches or thoughts about what a guy might do with their route running. Think about a batter at the plate, and anywhere other than with two outs in the ninth inning, largely it's still a personal battle between you and the pitcher, and that it's okay, I think he's going to throw a curve here because of this, that, and the other thing. But if you strike out or whatever, no big deal. A cornerback, you're playing that same mental game. But if you whiff, not only do you screw the team, but also it's embarrassing. Like, you get beat hard. A batter whiffing is not the most embarrassing thing in the world. A cornerback whiffing gets played on SportsCenter over and over and over again. And you got people on the internet saying, what are you thinking? What are you thinking here, Derek Stingley? So it takes a certain kind of confidence that it's hard to come by. Well, and obviously Stingley has a lot of confidence.
And that play he's describing there is against Tyreek Hill, who over the last 3 or 4 years, I think you make an argument over the last 3 or 4 years, he's the most valuable non-quarterback in the league. Maybe not so much last year because of how things went for Miami. But, I mean, that he's doing it against Tyreek Hill, and that he ripped it out of his hands, too, is just, I love that play. I absolutely love that play. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Good morning, guys. I agree with Seth. If that mock drafter thinks Nick won't try to trade up or down in the first round, then he is short-sighted in his process.
Well, okay.
Nick is a wheeler dealer. If he has an eye on a player that's available, then they need to trade up a slot or two to get him.
I think in defense of mock drafters, I mean, trying to predict or forecast what trades are going to be, for the most part, by and large, you'll throw a couple of trades in there just for novelty's sake.
Right.
But unless it involves a quarterback where you can predict or you're hearing that a team's going to try to trade up for a quarterback, it's a worthless endeavor. So you almost kind of look at it like, okay, this makes sense here and there. So I don't, in defense of the mock drafter, I don't think that he thinks that Nick Caserio wouldn't trade.
Right.
It's just that Nick Caserio doesn't know what trade is going to be available on draft day.
Yeah. Or the mock drafter has the answers to the test like Daniel Jeremiah did. back in 2023.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah he was so on the nose in predicting that the Texans would draft CJ Stroud and then trade up for Will Anderson. Daniel Jeremiah is a really smart guy, but he's also a very plugged in guy. I feel like he probably had some advance notice on that. Yep. Especially that was a mock draft that was published, I think, the day before the draft.
Yes.
So where we knew that Nick and the Cardinals had already been having conversations.
Yeah, the leaks were coming from the Cardinals side, if I had to guess on that one, to Daniel Jeremiah. Text message, at the end of the season, I saw an interview where Titus Howard commenting on the loss to Kansas City and the season in general and the state of the team and the offensive line. He talked about really working on his body and getting his body right, really coming back in top condition. So I think he knows he wasn't in the best shape and that there will be some changes. I got to tell you, by the end of the year, when I would see huddles around Titus Howard's locker with him talking, I just would scroll. I just got tired of listening to Titus this season for whatever reason. You know, like
really anybody on the offensive line.
Yeah.
You didn't want to hear anything about you guys are the biggest. Remember, we were saying
we're accountable. The they would make excuses all the time.
Like, do you guys understand how bad you are as a group? Mm-hmm. Do you guys really get it? Because you're right. It was a lot of excuses. It's been a steady diet for years and years and years of both Laramie, but especially Titus on social media defending false starts.
Yeah.
I mean, Titus will just flat out go on social media and say, nah, it looks fine to me. Don't know why this was a penalty. People get tired of that. You get really, really sick of it when it's one of the worst units in the league and you guys are acting like you're the victims or something. Mm-hmm. That was hard to stomach. So, a lot of that, I really don't want to have some kind of a witch hunt for Laramie Tunsil like he was the root of all evil or anything. But I do think that there was a tone in that offensive line room that wasn't going to be fixed by Laramie Tunsil's precedent, for example. Laramie, it took him, how many years did he spend in Houston?
Seven? Six seasons.
6 years in Houston. It took until midway through last year before he ever even looked like he felt bad about one of his penalties.
Yep.
It was excuse making when it came to the penalties over and over again.
What does that mock drafter that you guys were going through in the previous segment have the magnificent Gladstone doing in the draft? Glad you asked. He has them flip-flopping with the Jets, doing a trade with the Jets, trading down to 7. The Jets moving up and taking Travis Hunter. And the magnificent Gladstone, GM of the Jacksonville Jaguars, takes, behold, the 7th overall pick. The magnificent Gladstone takes Mason Graham, defensive tackle out of Michigan, with the 7th pick overall. Yeah.
Nothing I love more than seeing a stud defensive tackle in the division, given what the Texans... Let's get that interior offensive line hemmed up, all right?
Let's
go ahead and just take care of that this year, please. Yeah. Yep. Please. I can't watch another playoff game where the interior offensive line can almost single-handedly.
Yeah, happy Friday to you. I almost said Monday, which I don't know how you get that wrong.
That's really wrong.
If that tells you anything about how our day at Twin Peaks yesterday happened, I can tell you that
you
is...
You got the Monday blahs working?
Brother. I blame some of our good folks that came out. I know that Eli had me take a couple
of
shots.
Eli was just buying shots for everyone.
Yeah, I had a couple of shots. Those did not wear off quickly. Yeah. I had some shots with some other folks. Y'all turn out. Y'all show up for Sports Radio 610.
I got home and I was like, man, that's stronger than I thought it was.
Yeah, and you only had one. You were like, I need one and I got work to do. Yeah. And I was like, nah, I'm here and I am feeling it, but I'm excited. Yeah. It's a funky Friday here in Loop on Sports Radio 610. Let's get going. There's a lot to cover on this Friday, including I want to start with the Texans here, Lopez. We'll get to the tournament here shortly, but I did want to start with the Texans and get involved. 713-572-4610. That is the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line.
The Texas Hammer!
Thank you, Jim, and also thank you to the Mo Karam Injury Lawyers for the live stream.
We keep it 100.
On YouTube and Twitch, but y'all ready for the disrespect card to be played?
Yeah, man.
When it comes to these Texans? Because, I mean, look, this offseason has been one where locally we've had our ups and downs and we've had a lot of air been blown by us and others about these things in various different ways. But the thing that has been constant has been like a more national perspective of sports looking in on Houston and being like, what the bleep is happening, to the point where, you know, there's various, you know, grades and rankings on what the offseason has looked like to this point. And I think, to a man, they have been negative. I don't know that there's been any ones that have been, yo, the Texans are doing a great thing or having a good offseason. in a way that I think that we would have more diversity locally on grading this offseason thus far.
Yeah, and I was looking at these. So I stumbled across a post-free agency power rankings in the NFL. And I went, oh, that's interesting. You know, curiosity, that whole thing. And it got me thinking, are we too close to the Texans or are they too far? You know, because these national, I don't think they know some of the things that we do, which is, you know, obviously we're around this team all the time and talk to people and know things from over there all the time.
So we drink and know things.
Maybe they're too far away, but maybe we're too close as well. You know, with the rose-colored glasses, all that. So I started digging in and I searched post-free agency power rankings.
Okay.
I came across four. The highest the Texans were ranked, 14th. 15th, 16th, and 23rd were the other three. Dude, they're middle of the pack. You know, from the outside looking in. Middle of the pack. Is that, what is that? I mean, are they too far away from things or are we too close?
I'm not even sure if I have a particular answer to those particular questions. It feels like it's going to be somewhere in the middle, which again, that's not a satisfactory answer. But the reason why I get there is because you look at the offseason that the Texans have had, and some of the, and I don't even want to like cast judgment. If we're just going to go as objectively as we can, the largest, like the ones that made the most noise of the Texans' moves, what were those?
The most recent one was a big one. And of course,
the trading of Laramie Tunsil.
Well, that was the biggest one going the other way.
Right, but that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But like, let's talk about it in general. The moves that they made.
Mm-hmm.
Biggest noisemaker was an outgoing trade that brought back draft picks. Is some of it future capital. Another one, at least locally, was bringing back Sheldon Rankins. Another one was bringing in C.J. Gardner-Johnson. That's the one that had the most positive impact.
Yeah.
And you sent out Kenyon Green, so it still had a little bit of a light shown on this offensive line, which was a clear and evident issue for this Texas team last year. Like, I think that in any given space, there's not a lot of the things that are sexy for offseason and for free agency in particular, where honestly winning free agency isn't the biggest thing in the world, but it's just kind of surprising that there was no one willing to find as much as the positives within what the Texans have done.
But you mentioned C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I thought they got some there.
They definitely got some love on the C.J. GJ.
Christian Kirk.
That's true, and that happened a little bit earlier, and I think the love that was there.
And I thought the one that would maybe put him over the top, and this, to be fair, this was the ones I looked at were right before the Cam Robinson deal. Maybe that changes something. I don't think it changes a lot because there's mixed reviews on him.
Well, I think it continues to add to the negativity. I want to take you to Nate Tice. He's by the way, the co-host of the Football 301 podcast with Charles McDonald, who we talked to earlier this week. I know that Matt Harmon also gets involved. I don't want to ignore him, but it's a solid podcast. Nate Tice is very good, right? His dad, Mike Tice, coached the Vikings for a very long time. I say all this to remind you that I think he's very good at his job and his analysis. And I bring you to his recent thoughts. I think that they had this podcast come out literally yesterday about the Cam Robinson signing in particular.
The stopgaps that they signed and trade for is a little concerning to me because, you know, signing Cam Robinson to the one-year deal, he's the stopgap, and he has started, but I've brought this stat up a lot. He allowed the highest one-on-one pressure rate among all offensive tackles last year in the NFL once he joined the Vikings. And even if you looked at the whole season, he was still below average when he was with the Jags. He's always been average at best at tackle. And, you know, the Patriots, who have gigantic gaps on their offensive line, said no thanks. That's because, you know, Doug Marrone, their offensive line coach, who I also have some issues with, some of the stuff he's done recently. But he was like, I don't want Cam Robinson. I coached him before. I don't want him again. That should be a big red alert. Like, a team that desperately needs offensive linemen, and coaches love coaching players they used to coach because they're lazy. And he was like, no legs. That is scary to me.
I mean, that's the strongest case against Cam Robinson you'll hear, the fact that his former coach didn't take him.
Yeah.
That's about as strong as you. And I've been defending the move because of the Sam Darnold factor holding the ball, and it makes tackles look bad. But that's about as strong as you can get against Cam Robinson. So you might be right. I thought it might help the Texans in terms of power rankings. Hell, it might hurt them.
And honestly, that might be an indication that we might be too close. Because again, we have been looking at, and I think a lot of the justification on offensive line and the way that they've gone about things has been, it was really bad last year. I think we understand uniquely the things that made it a little bit difficult to push forward in the immediate and in the near future for, and I know that those sound like the same thing, but I think you get what I mean. Like the immediate being this season, the near being the next two, three seasons future with this offensive line and trying to make it better with Laremy Tunsil, whether it's contract, whether it's, you know, kind of culture, what have you.
Yeah.
And we know uniquely those issues, and so we're focused in on that. But to be fair, and I know that there's been people on this station that have had criticisms of it. What's happening to my boy Clint?
Yeah.
This offensive line, what they have done to try and make it better, there is a lot of questions here still. There's a lot of questions here still. So even in that big place, the big issue that you came into the offseason with, I don't know that you have definitive answers. And, I mean, even the best-case scenario you look at, and if you go Cam Robinson as some level of competition or starter, you have two other guys that you brought in on the offensive line that are just competition, and you're still hoping you're still hoping to get better play out of Titus, you're hoping to get better play out of Blake Fisher, and then you're hoping to plop in a rookie or two and get better. Like, it's fair to have some of that I guess quote unquote disrespect, but I think locally, right, we're gonna hold that though. We're gonna hold on to that card on the off chance there that this offense comes out here like gangbusters.
But this is the reason I feel that it is far too those rankings are far too low.
Okay.
Because you can talk about, and we just did, you know, the offensive line and some of the moves and Laremy Tunsil going out and not a lot coming back, and you're doubting Cam Robinson. It's still low in terms of the post, you know, free agency rankings, power rankings. Did you not see this defense? Did you not see how good this and how far this defense took this team? You know, with a subpar offensive line that can only, and I don't subscribe to this, but I do get it in this regard. You know, it can't be worse. You know, that's not the bar, but at the same time, it can't be. It truly cannot be worse. Did you not see how far this defense took this team last year? They are better than 15, 16, and 23 just based on that alone and the moves that they added on the defense. And one more thing. Are you not familiar with C.J. Stroud's work? So like when they come up with these power rankings, yes, you might just focus in on, well, I don't know about that offensive line, it can't be worse, but I don't know how much better it got. Yeah, but you're ignoring the reason that they got to the divisional round, you know?
Do you think that those rankings are rankings of the teams at this juncture, or do you think those rankings are just rankings of the off seasons?
I think they're being they're biased. They're being swayed by just the offseason moves and not looking at the teams.
Okay.
And that's where I was like, get ready to play the disrespect card. Because I guarantee you this defense is not just better. It could be a lot better than it was last year. And we know how good it was. And now you've got, you know, Gardner Johnson. You've got all these guys coming in. You got a happy Danielle Hunter and, you know, all this stuff. And C.J. Stroud with, oh, by the way, new offensive scheme. We don't know what it's going to be, but it can't be worse, as has been talked about.
Hey, that's another question mark, ain't it?
Yeah. Oh, no, it could be. It could be, but it also could be a big check mark, you know?
Sure. Do you think that this is a fair text that comes in from the 281 on the Jim Mallett, the Texas Hammer text?
The Texas Hammer!
Oh, Jim, you still there? What's happening? The Texans are not trying to win a Super Bowl. They just want to make moves to keep you interested so they can fill up the stadium.
Welcome to 2014.
Okay, so you're saying that's
what the Texans might have been in the past.
Okay,
And I'm just being honest. I think they like to play dress up is what I used to call it. Some of our longtime listeners will remember me talking about the Texans as a team that likes to play dress up, like to say all the right things, you know, like to act like they're going to be a contender, but never really back it up with big moves. I don't think that's the case at all. They are making win now moves. They did it last year. They spent the money. Cal and Hannah are spending money. They're, you know, so
they sure are.
So no, this comment right there might be a little PTSD from the way the Texans used to do things. That's not how they do it now.
Okay, so then can I add into the into evidence, as I'm trying to, I guess, pretend to be some level of lawyer or what have you, this that came out from The Athletic, and this is actually focusing on ownerships. They put out a little bit of a breakdown. In fact, a tiers list. I love a good tiers
Everybody
list.
Everybody loves a good
man.
Tiers
it's
list.
It's always good to see a good tiers list. How much does every NFL owner want to win? Mm-hmm. And they broke this down into tiers, as I mentioned, the tiers named as such. There's a contention mode tier. There's a willing to do what it takes tier. There's a content to compete tier. There is a trying to get right, to get it right tier.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a stuck in struggle mode tier. What tier would you assume, or would you slot, or would you maybe figure that the Athletic slotted the McNair ownership group into.
I'm 100% willing to do what it takes. 100%. And look, you guys know me, man. If you listen to this show for any amount of time, I'm not... That's the last thing I am, is the old Texans, you know, they can't do no wrong, because I literally just said it. I used to say, you know, they used to play dress up. I think this is a different era.
All right, so I will bring you to, again, to this tier list. Contention mode has the likes of the Ravens, the Bills, the Lions, the Chiefs, the Eagles. That feels right, right?
Yeah.
Okay, willing to win or to do what it takes to win. That's the tier that you think that they should be in. All right, the team's in there. The Packers, the Chargers, the Rams, the Dolphins, the Vikings, the Niners, the Bucks, the Commanders.
Hmm.
Finn.
What tier is that?
That is
willing to do what
willing
it takes.
Willing to do what it takes. So they
Chargers?
Yeah, well.
Good question.
I don't know about the Chargers, man.
Right? The Chargers are in there. The Commandos have just gotten into that realm. Mm-hmm. But yes, like those are the teams that they put in.
Not the Texans.
No Texans. We move to the next one. Content to compete, which is what that texter was throwing up there. The Cardinals, the Bengals, the Saints, Finn. Trying to get it right is where the Panthers, the Bears, the Broncos, and the Raiders, the Patriots, Seahawks, and Texans.
Trying to get it right?
I'll give you the blurb in a segment that I like to call reading. Yeah. Houston, owned by Cal McNair, has won back-to-back AFC South titles with Coach DeMeco Ryans and GM Nick Caserio at the helm. Factual. but the Texans have had a curious offseason, trading away their two best veteran offensive linemen while all... Wait, hold on. Sorry. Let me stop. In doing the segment of reading, I just got hit. Their best two veteran offensive linemen, because one of them, I imagine, is Laremy Tunsil. Maybe you make that case. Are we talking about Kenyon Green? And I say this with all due respect to Kenyon Green, man. Yeah. Like, I'm not trying to be no jerk.
Shaq?
He got released.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, we got to be talking about Shaq.
I will continue the segment that I like to call reading.
You're out of breath. That threw you for a curve.
It did. I was shocked, and I read this earlier. All right, trading away their best two veteran offensive linemen while also making Derek Stingley Jr. the highest-paid cornerback in the league and giving defensive end Danielle Hunter a big money extension. The desire is there, but if the Texans don't land a couple of O-line cornerstones in the draft, C.J. Stroud's chances of achieving his true potential are bleak.
That's garbage. That's just flat-out garbage. That's not what this team is. We can talk about it. We do talk about it. Some of the things we can question, maybe some things we endorse. But to say that they're not willing to do what it takes to win, this is 2 years running where they're spending money, they're bringing in players, they're trying to find the solution, you know, to put them over the top. Well, they're doing everything they can.
They are trying to get it right.
It seemed like last season was the key because they went out and got Danielle Hunter, which nobody expected that.
Yeah.
They traded for Stephon Diggs. It seemed like they were trying to win.
Mm-hmm.
So again,
that's disrespect.
So go ahead and put that one in your back pocket.
Ring the bell. That's disrespect. We're playing the
bell's a little far
the disrespect
right now.
Card here. There we go. There's the bell right there's the disrespect and cliche bell. It's a versatile bell.
So, I mean, look, we're just going to have to hold on to the disrespect. While also, I think, very rightfully watching this offensive line intently to see, can you then make all of these naysayers, let all these naysayers know, shout out to Jalen Milroe, in this space, because I am starting to have some concern. I'm not going to lie about this offense. I guess starting is not right because we've been in this place, but... This offensive line.
The
team at large is in a great place, but there's a huge, huge linchpin that this lands on, and it's making sure your offensive line gets right because it is fair to say that if you don't get this offensive line right, you know, and CJ Stroud's chances of achieving what he can do are bleak. Like, that's 100% true. We lived through that last season, and it can't be that again.
Yeah.
And so, depending on what Nick Caserio is capable of doing for the remainder of this period.
No, I feel disrespected.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we can all carry this disrespect together. Shout out to Pal Pal, says, stop listening to the national media trying to cover any Houston team a long time ago. Houston media can't cover, national media, rather, can't cover Houston accurately. Let's hope that they're right. Let's hope that they're right, because that's exactly what the Texans need. They need the national media to be very wrong in this regard in order to reach what they need to in this season in particular. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610, just getting going.
Live from Twin Peaks at Kirby and 59, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
Damn right. We're out here at the Twin Peaks on Kirby and Southwest Freeway. Come out and say what's up to us, just like our guy Adam. Adam's right over here listening every day. And he is out here. He just decided to bring his laptop with him. He's working.
That's what I'm talking about.
At the Twin Peaks, yeah. So that he can have he can enjoy the Eat, Drink, Sync views, and of course,
is he in the meeting?
College basketball.
Did he tell the job he's at the meeting?
He's at a meeting.
I don't think he's actively at a meeting, but he will be here soon.
Oh yes, he is. If you're Adam's boss, he's at a meeting.
Meeting with a client.
Yeah. Oh, I really should have used a fake name, shouldn't I? Sorry, I meant Joe. I mean, Joe is out here.
Had another listener come up. He said he was going to go. He told his work that he was going to go pick up his Army Reserve uniform that was at the dry cleaners. That's creative.
Yeah.
That's creative right
now,
there.
But now we got to say thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
100%.
Even though he didn't go get his uniform.
But that's not that doesn't feel like an excuse that buys you a lot of time. You know what I mean? Like, that feels like an excuse that buys you about 20, 30 minutes at max.
Yeah, but they couldn't find it.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you was just sitting there for about 3 hours? That's really...
That's what it was.
Why do you smell of beer? What's happening? Don't worry about it. All right.
Yeah.
We were mentioning earlier, we were talking about it earlier, Cam Robinson, 1 year deal, $12 million, up to 14.5 is what that can get to. And I'm interested, like, does this feel like enough of a move? Because I think we were talking about it. I think our perspective has been, you had a lot of question marks. You were asking a lot of Nick Caley as the new offense coordinator, Cole Popovich stepping up to being the big offensive line coach. And, you know, there's a lot of development that needs to be done on this offensive line. Cam Robinson, I viewed that as, okay, you have a check mark. You have a starting caliber tackle. But we were talking about it. I mean, and it's been talked about up and down since we found out about the signing. What was it, almost like 3 o'clock or 2:30 yesterday?
Right after our show, damn it.
Oh, I wasn't too mad about it. I thought the drive handled it very well in breaking down what was happening. But there's a lot of pressures in there. I went back and I was watching some of his plays from last year, and he got with a level of bull rush, and it's not like he's a great run blocker either. Does this feel like enough in what they're doing here on the offensive line and what you're looking at now, especially now that he is locked into your left tackle, a spot that you previously had Laramie Tunsil in?
It does, man. It really does to me, and I'll bet you anything those rushes you saw that he was getting beat on were when he was wearing a Minnesota uniform, not a Jacksonville uniform, because the quarterback was Sam Darnold.
And there were some Jacksonville ones. There was a lot of Minnesota ones.
Yeah, because Sam Darnold holds on to the ball so dang long, and I think that affected him. The other thing is, I just, it's cool to have a left tackle. Like, no questions about it. He's a left tackle. Whatever Popovich does with him, hopefully, it works. Whatever scheme Nick Caley puts together, hopefully, it fits him better. But this guy is a left tackle, and we didn't, we thought, fingers crossed, Titus Howard could maybe do it, but we didn't know. This guy's been in the league what, 8 years?
Yes, sir.
And he's been a left tackle. I think it is enough. I'll put it this way: I think it is enough to do two things. Number one, give you some flexibility in the draft and moving forward, because now not the entire world. Have they not brought in Cam Robinson?
Whoa! Cam Newton on this offensive line. What would that look like?
I bet he'd be pretty good. Have they not brought in Cam Robinson, the entire world would know, oh, Nick's going to draft a tackle, or he's going to draft a lineman. Now you have a little bit of flexibility. That's number one. Number two is what I just said. I think he's pretty damn good. I really do. I get, the pressure rates and all that stuff. All I know is I've seen him for a long time, and because he was in the division for a while and everything else. I think he's exactly what you need for, as a replacement, and also exactly what you need as a guy that's going to help the room, help with what the one thing they wanted to change in that room.
I want to circle back around. We were talking Blake Fisher, Titus Howard. Like, I think that ends up being the real interesting part here, and we didn't get to dive all that deep into it. Somebody asked, do you think Titus Howard in 2025 is better than Blake Fisher?
Titus Howard in 2025 better than Blake Fisher?
Because that's the conversation that you're having at right tackle now.
Yeah.
How are you planning on playing this, right? And I'm my personal thought, and I think you saw this. I sent a text to you as soon as this thing breaks. I go, okay, so what does your line look like as of right now? It is
give it to us.
Cam Robinson at left tackle. I imagine Titus Howard at left guard. I went with Patterson at center. It could still be Scruggs. They feel like they're on relatively level footing, depending. That feels like a training camp decision.
Yeah, competition.
And right guard, I imagine, at this moment is Laken Tomlinson. We'll see what happens. Obviously, draft. I think guard, those guard positions get interesting there. And then right tackle is Blake Fisher. And I was like, okay, this feels, well, definitely it feels more palatable than what they where they were at before. But then on top of that, it feels like I can see a bridge to where you get to a line that is you know, passable. And again, I don't want to the bar to simply be better than just not awful like last year. But at least I could see passable. And I again, I don't think we're going to get a Mahler offensive line, but I do think that you can get to a passable offensive line from this play.
Yeah, and when you said that, I thought it was obviously it is a check mark if that's the way it looks. A couple things that are going to be intriguing, you know, moving forward, especially as we get into training camp in the preseason. I know they like Juice Scruggs at center. Of course, they've said they like Juice Scruggs at center.
Sure.
And I think one thing to really watch is the communication and who has the calls up front. C.J. Stroud probably wants a little bit more control on the field. I'm sure he felt trapped, you know, sort of pigeonholed under the Bobby Slowick offense of, you know, I'm the guy out there. You know, I'd like to have a little more control of this.
Right.
They put a lot on Juice Scruggs. He didn't really handle it in terms of calls and blocking assignments, et cetera. Well, if you take a little bit of that off of him, you know, maybe he could be the center, and that kind of changes the entire dynamic up there. If you take a little bit, and maybe C.J. Stroud has a little more, you know, control of what the calls are, then maybe you go, you know, Cam Robinson at left tackle, ultimately Tytus Howard at left guard, Scruggs at center, Tomlinson or competition at right guard, and then Blake Fisher at right tackle. I think, you know, they're going to give Juice Scruggs every opportunity to play center. I
think. Okay, I'm interested in that. But either way, right? Whether it's Scruggs, whether it's Patterson, I think again, relatively inexperienced player there. Obviously, relatively inexperienced player at right tackle. This is why we were talking about. There's a you're asking for a lot from the development here. Can I throw something at you? Because this is something I've been thinking about, and this is why I was really hopeful that can you get. And I was thinking really on the interior for the most part, but can you get a veteran player to come in? And obviously, you get that in signing Cam Robinson. But it's also because I was thinking about the value of playing next to as a young player, including whichever player that you draft, which it feels very much like it'll be a guard. Drafting somebody and having them play next to a veteran.
Yeah.
And so one of the things in the perspective offensive line that at least I put forward or that we have is, you know, the possibility of, like, drafting a right guard and playing them next to Blake Fisher is one that's a little uncomfortable for me because there's not a lot of veteran leadership on that side of the line.
Then. Yeah.
Is it possible that would you be okay at all with moving, seeing or trying to move Tytus Howard to right guard? Like, that is, again, we're moving Tytus around a lot in this situation. But in my mind, what that allows you to do, especially if you can get a rookie, draft somebody that could play left guard. Hey, I don't know, Gray Zabel, right? Who's played?
Yeah, that would be the ideal one, at least from most people's perspective.
Where at that point you're putting a rookie offensive guard in Gray Zabel, just the placeholder in this scenario, next to a Cam Robinson who is a vet, right, of certain repute. Then you have your center, who again, Patterson,
both
Scruggs,
veterans, not maybe to the point of
young players, but then they'd be playing next to Tytus Howard, who is also playing next to Blake Fisher, right, who is a veteran. I like the idea of, like, having those tent poles of a guy next to him. It feels like as you're trying to also develop this line, yes, you want to make a good line, but also it's very clear that part of this is trying to, you know, get better in the future and bring those young guys along. Is it do you see that as a possibility in any ways, or am I just wilding right now?
No, I don't think you're wilding. But
wait, say that again.
I know.
I don't think you're wilding.
you dropped the D in that instance. Phrase it.
I didn't want to be too cool for school here.
Okay, fair enough.
I can say it. I don't think you're wilding. All right. Is that better?
Yes. That was well executed.
I just wanted to fit my demographic by saying wilding. But either way, I don't think you're that. But I also think. Boy, you're moving Tytus a lot, man.
Yeah.
You're moving him from right tackle to left guard, back to right tackle, back to right guard. You know, is that something you want to do? But you brought up a good point. I don't know if it was on. I don't remember if it was on air or off. I mean, he's got the salary of a guard now, you know, in terms of cap hit and everything else. So, he, you know, I think he could – And this is what I answered in that text thread that we had. I think he's going to start out competing with Blake Fisher at right tackle, see how that plays out, with the hope that maybe Blake Fisher wins it and shows some progression, and then move him to left guard.
Do you agree with the 281 here that says you still need one more free agent lineman?
Or a drafted.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Is I think you're drafting an offensive lineman, which feels, I mean, that felt like an absolute for a very long time now. I don't know that you absolutely need another free agent lineman. I imagine there's people talking about David Andrews, that as a center acquisition, which I see that you clearly love by the sound that you made with your voice there. But I don't know that that's the way that I personally would go, even though I understand. Like, I've been somebody who's sitting here saying you've got a lot of question marks on this offensive line. But I think that you have now in a It's not a lot, but I think with Cam Robinson, you have a pathway to have some vets on the line with what you knew was going to be a younger and hopefully more talented offensive line. And when you talk about all five all the way across,
and I'm not like hating on David Andrews. I just don't know how much he's got left. And you know, you've got a young guy there in Scruggs that you like. Let's see how that goes. Free agent, I mean, I guess maybe for another like a Tomlinson type, you know, a free agent, or maybe not even.
You want another guy?
No, I'm saying that would be the only one I could see. But I'd much rather have a drafted guy.
From the 281, do you guys think that they overpaid on Hunter? Sure seems like it. Nah, man.
Oh, no.
You'd put Hunter in that top class of pass rushers in the NFL right now.
Absolutely. Just look at his pressures and much less the sacks and everything else.
And one of the things that, and it's a weird thing to say considering like the fact that there's a lot of dancing around the salary cap structure, but it feels like it's a 1 year addition on there. Like you added another year. It's not something that I think is going to hamstring you. And in the immediate, it's actually supposed to help you a little bit in adding and giving you a little bit of salary cap relief here. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610.
All right, welcome back in as we get you updated here. Colorado State, what in the hell happened in that game?
Seriously, your dudes.
They were up. Now, listen, I picked Colorado State, and I feel good about this. I picked Colorado State to beat Memphis.
I picked Memphis, and I was feeling good about it.
And this second half has to be out of control. Yeah, 40-25 in the second half is what we got. Because Memphis had a nice little solid 5-point lead at the half, and Colorado State has just run through. Like, that is a situation. Like, Penny Hardaway.
It's been on borrowed time.
But what can you do?
What if you're Memphis?
Like, yeah, like, I'm just saying, like, it's, like...
Get someone else.
Can you be better? Like, I mean, I would think, but can
Calipari.
You...
Calipari.
Yeah,
they were better.
But this is what they're thinking. Is there, like, if Penny Hardaway left Memphis, like, what kind of, like that's not a job. That's not a sexy job.
Nah.
What conference are they in? The AAC? Is that where they still are?
I think they still are, yeah.
I just don't.
Not a good conference.
Like, if they were to get Penny, Penny is a guy that could recruit like hell. Now, KK's coach. Much once he gets in there, but he can recruit like hell in a way that I don't know if other people would be able to get that into Memphis. And two, he won't leave. Like even if you found success and you found a really good coach, let's say they found Buzz Peterson or Buzz Williams, excuse me, A&M's coach. Buzz Williams is leaving Memphis as soon as he gets the chance, or Dusty May is leaving as soon as he gets a better opportunity. I feel like they are stuck, and the five seed is the highest that they can get through.
Yeah, and look, Penny Hardaway is my favorite basketball player of all time. I had so many of his jerseys. I still have a Russian nesting doll in my apartment of him. Anyways, I really wanted him. I really wanted him to work out in Memphis, but it's just, and he is bringing, that was the huge perk of hiring him was with the AAU circuits. He was going to bring in the players, and he has done that, but obviously it's still not, he's never gotten past the first weekend of March Madness. And now I think it's 7 years.
He clearly gets out coached a lot.
Oh yeah. All the time.
Yeah.
So point being, like, the one benefit or his greatest benefit obviously is not good enough. And for the record, This is the first time ever that a 12 seed will be favored against a 5 seed.
They were favored
and actually win the game.
Yeah,
they were every other time a 12 seed has been favored, they've actually lost that matchup to a 5 seed. This will be the first time that a 5 seed was an underdog and actually lost in March Madness.
Yeah, they're down by double digits, so they look like they're going to lose that game. Iowa State will move on, blowing out Lipscomb. Alabama, they were struggling a bit there, Robert Morris. They win 90-81. Mississippi State falls to Baylor in the early games, and Duke is putting on Mount St. Mary's. We just had that conversation about Cooper Flagg, as he is in. He's in 13 minutes, 9 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists in his first game back, coming back from that ankle issue. Vandy, they are ahead of St. Mary's in this game. And then Ole Miss and North Carolina just tipped off. So that is the tournament update here, sponsored by Reynolds. Nope. No, it's not. Is it? Did I just make up Reynolds Wrap? Tyler is a sponsor to the NCAA tournament update.
I think you did, but I like it. It sticks.
It does.
Yeah. You get it.
Oh, Reynolds Wrap. Sorry about that.
Well, that'll stick.
Well, hell, here, there's an opportunity for you right now in the next 2 hours. I just made up a tournament update and a sponsor all at once right there.
Reynolds Wrap, keeping our hot takes fresh.
and grill, the grill version of Reynolds Wrap. That's just a little. All right, we got to stop just giving too much love to Reynolds Wrap right now. But all right, so that's the latest there. Simple question to you all, 713-572-4610. Those of you on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line, and those of you on YouTube and Twitch. Simple question right now that we can dive into. Do you feel better today, currently, after all the moves made right now? Obviously, it's not finished. But do you feel better today about the Texans than you did from when their season ended? Do you feel better today? Then think about all the moves from Tunzel to Shaq Mason to bringing in Christian Kirk to Kenyon Green to Gardner Johnson to Justin Watson, for those who are into that one, making sure they've locked up Derek Stingley, locked up Danielle Hunter for another year. Some of the other moves that they've made. Do you feel better about the Texans today from season's end?
Man, I saw this on the rundown about 2 hours ago, and I've been thinking about it ever since. And I don't know. I might be about the same, because for me,
oh no,
the two biggest areas to me were offensive line, okay, and wide receiver depth, wide receiver core as a whole.
They've made some moves.
They have.
Yes.
And we talked about the Christian Kirk thing at the time. And if he's healthy, I really like that addition. I am concerned, though, about the depth, whereas. Well, you said when season ended, and when season ended, you already out Tank Dell and Steph Diggs, and you knew he wasn't coming back. So now that I think about it, yeah, I guess wide receiver, I feel better today than I did at the end of the season. Offensive line's the other big one. I don't think they're done there yet, so I'm giving them an incomplete, and I have hope that they're going to better the offensive line from today to week one. But I think you downgraded at left tackle, even though I think it was the right move to move on from Laramie Tunsil. My hope is that cohesion, the group, and with the new coaching staff or the new offensive coordinator and offensive line coach, that as a whole, the offensive line will be better. So all this is to say, I'm not really sure. I might be at the same spot or slightly more positive now than I was at the end of the year, but I don't think it's a huge jump in positivity just yet. I am curious to see what they do with the draft and how the rest of this offseason and summer shakes out. But I don't think I feel worse. I think I'm at least the same, maybe a little more positive now than I was at the end of the year.
Yeah, 713-572-4610, YouTube and Twitch. Do you feel better about the Texans right now from season's end? Season's end. They're in the divisional round. They're in that game. Some people felt like they were more in that game than others. But they're in that game against the Chiefs. They end up losing right there. They've made several moves. I'm going to tell you, someone texted in, I feel 100% better about the moves. Ron, I'd feel better if Trent Brown were a run-stopping defensive tackle at 380 pounds from Ocho. And Slick Nick, we trust, someone texted in, hell yeah, Tunzel's gone. All that matters now, just bring Diggs back. is what Cornbread said.
The eggs was open.
I feel better. I thought they were flirting with the essence of the culture that they were trying to build having Laremy Tunsil here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to sit here and lie to you in your face and tell you that I feel like they have improved this thing up front that much. But I do think that they were flirting with the essence of what they wanted to be culture-wise with Laremy Tunsil. And I did, and I've been saying it for a while, they need to move themselves out of the Laremy Tunsil business. And I do think that is a big move. I feel better about Christian Kirk than most, clearly I see. We were on the day after it happened. Clint has, I think, I'm higher on Christian Kirk than Clint is. So I do feel better about that, although I know it's not done on the with the pass catchers they have. And then the defense. I think Gardner Johnson, I think, is a good add. They have a potential to have a very, very good secondary. I don't know how to feel about the new coordinator, play caller, and the staff.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But, yeah. Like, if we just go and think about all those things, right? Because that was the big thing. They fired Bobby Slowick, and, again, I think Bobby Slowick had his flaws. I think Bobby Slowick was working with a lot of issues. And now we're seeing the Texans agreed with him. Because last year's tell me if I'm wrong, Tyler. Last year's starting offensive line, like the first 8-9 weeks of the season, was Laremy Tunsil gone. Kenyon Green gone. Juice Scruggs, I don't know if we know if he's going to play center right off the bat. But hell, he didn't end the season playing center. Hell, he didn't end the season playing and he was healthy. But Scruggs up in the air. Shaq Mason was the right guard, gone. And now Titus Howard was the right tackle. And I think he may play right tackle. Don't know where he's going to go, but there may be a change there too. So at the very least, like, three of the guys aren't even here anymore. So they up front told you we need a change and we had a problem. So I think overall I feel better about the team, because I do think the subtraction of just Laremy Tunsil, not to say he's a bad dude, but just what they have been trying to push forward. They're trying to push. They're trying to push you, Will. They're trying to push you, CJ. They're trying to push you, Jalen Petrie. And he, to me, goes counter to that. So I think for me personally, I do. I feel better about them as season's in. Now, do I feel better about them being a championship contender from season's end? No. I think that's probably...
Quite frankly, it's bullshit.
That's probably the same, if not... No, I believe this defense probably got better. That's probably the same right now for me in terms of where I feel of them in terms of a realistic chance to win a championship.
That's why I'm torn. I was going to ask you where you put the ceiling at, because... I'm with you. I feel good about the changes and even the environment of that locker room and roster. And change can be very exciting because of the hope of what it brings. And so there's an opportunity here to be a lot better on the offensive line. There's an opportunity for the play caller to be a lot better this year than last year. Hopefully it doesn't get any worse. So you're excited for that opportunity and the potential. I give them the benefit of the doubt of adding an interior offensive line and a wide receiver in the draft that I think will help those units as well. So I'm optimistic about still improving in those areas. But then, with that said, while I do feel good about the moves they made this offseason, the adjustment maybe to the culture, if I ask myself what's the ceiling for this team next year, I'd still put it at the same spot as last year in terms of number of wins, division, you win one playoff game. But I don't see this team right now as they're constructed today as being a team that could get to the AFC championship or even win the AFC just yet. And so that's where I say,
do you feel like there are realistic moves out there that will get you to that spot?
At this point, I don't know, unless you get guys in the draft that can come in, and this certainly could happen, and could be impact players right away at the offensive line
and wide receiver position. But I wish, and easier said now than before, although I was saying some of these things on the air at the time, I wish they took some bigger swings specifically on the offensive line.
Just one.
Yeah, go get Will. Will Fries was the guy I wanted.
That, me too. Me too. And, that was, know, we talked about it. That was, and I know it cost $80 million. I know it did that. And this is up to this point right now. I am legit surprised that it feels like they have decided to go bargain shopping.
Yes.
At the most important thing that they had to fix.
Right.
And that's 2 years in a row. Yes, I understand the Laramie Tunsil. Again, I praise that move. I am just surprised that it also went with 1 year, $4 million Tomlinson.
Mm-hmm.
1 year, $3 million today, Trent Brown, for another tackle. 1 year, $12 million for Cam Robinson. All of that would have been good if they said, we're going to get Dolman at center, or we're going to get Fries at guard. Like, all of that would have been a big, or we're going to be the one to trade for Joe Tooney the way the Bears did, or something like that. That's the only thing. That is the thing to me when you come out and say, we have got to protect CJ. Our quarterback got hit too much. And again, I still want to give them time. I didn't know, and hell, I covered the team too. I didn't know Joe Tooney was available, but he was. Maybe there is another guard out here that we don't even have at the top of mind that's available, that maybe that could be available, mm-hmm. that could be added to this team. Who knows?
And the drive returns from their commercial break. There you go. Head on a swivel, boys.
There it is. Drive is live. I had
Deb's a big winner. Deb is the big winner.
Deb was the big winner.
$50 Twin Peaks gift card.
There you go. Get you a Twin Peaks gift card. You got several chances to win things. You got another $50 Twin Peaks gift card, as well as $25 Visa gift cards.
Was it me, or was he yelling at us?
Who? Tyler?
Tyler.
I think Tyler was just excited. I believe. That's how I'm taking
it. Yeah, that's it.
I feel like you yelled at us, Tyler.
No.
I mean, your headsets weren't on, and we were back from a commercial, so.
Oh, I forget you could see us.
He could. Mine.
Congratulating Deb, least, and she was
least,
winning.
Yeah, Deb was winning. At least
winning's fun.
My headset was not in my hand. it was confiscated from me, but no, we are having a good time. We're back. You can have a chance if you are not in the building yet, and if you're coming in as you need to be, or if you are in the building, you can sign up and put it in our raffle little barrel there. We got the real deal in here, and you could be a winner like Deb, who just took home a prize. We've got three other things we're going to cut somebody else up with over the next couple of hours, so come on and have a good time and hang out with this McNee, baby. McNeese up here, 40-16, man. Come on, man. We got to be feeling good. And then Tyler, Clint, he has Gonzaga and Georgia. And Gonzaga's up 11-0 in this game to start. I mean, this is we got a shot here. See, this is why I can't do this, because all of this can be completely thrown to hell with just Missouri coming out and being stupid.
Yeah, when he says do this, he's talking about making these bets, making these parlay bets that we got going on.
No, sorry, man. There's nothing to do this thing here, man. That
gets a little excited.
I get a little excited, man. I want to do it for the people, man. That was fun last year.
I mean, we got a good little start here. So, man, you're not going to find. You better settle down. Hell, you're going to have a heart attack. You ain't going to find out your final bet until midnight.
Yeah, no, yeah. You got Michigan late.
Late game.
That's all right. But come on out, have a good time, and enjoy yourself here as the tournament, my favorite day on the sports calendar, has started. Here, get you a beer, get you whatever, and come on and hang out. You said this earlier. You're talking about the number two receiver, Clint.
Yeah.
And right now, the most accomplished outside of Nico Collins is Christian Kirk. And I wonder, from the people here, those of you on YouTube and Twitch, you can jump in on this as well. Those of you on the Texas Hammer, the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line, you can join in on this 271-357-2416. Are you comfortable with Christian Kirk right now as a number two receiver, right? I'm not saying that the Texans are done adding receivers, because I don't believe that Justin Watson and Isaiah Xavier Hutchinson and John Metchie should be it. But say they even add another one, and maybe this person is more of a third. Are you comfortable with Christian Kirk as a number two receiver?
I am not. No. I think if you look at Christian Kirk right now, even if you get a healthy Christian Kirk, I'm not talking about who you like the most. I'm just talking about if you'd have put Christian Kirk on his football team last year, he would have been the fourth best receiver. And I'm just talking about as a guy that I think Tank Dell is a better route runner. I think Tank Dell is a better separator. I think Tank Dell is a better tracker of the football and making big time plays. Obviously, Nico and Diggs would be viewed above him. And so I don't think
Diggs is right now. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll say going into last year, I would not have shaken my mouth to say that Christian Kirk is better than Diggs. So now with the injury, another year off, we've seen some football. Maybe Christian Kirk can play same level of ball that Diggs can right now, but he would have been, in my opinion, would have been the fourth best receiver in terms of creating separation and making plays. He would have been the fourth best receiver on his team last year, and right now, and the less versatile guy versatile guy on the team. So, I think it's a big dip from one year to the next, and I think here's where. For me, it's tough to have with the Texans this year. It's going to be tough until I see what they're going to do offensively. It's going to be tough for me to have the 1-2-3 guy conversation. We had this. We talked about this last week with B. Scott. Like, I'm not looking for a guy that you and I would sit here and say, "Well, this guy's better than Christian Kirk." As much as I'm looking for another outside receiver that's a great route runner, you know, or an outside receiver that's a take the top off the cover speed guy, because I think this is going to be more about like specific styled receivers playing in specific places this year instead of just three or four guys that can do it all, right? So I'm looking for more of a specific receiver than I am necessarily a guy that's better than Christian Kirk, but I think he would be more important than Christian Kirk, yes.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they need somebody that can stretch the defense more, but for me, my thing is, because I see someone text in and said, hell no, they don't believe that he would be a better, that he they're comfortable him as a two. To me, if he is healthy, which has been a thing that has ended his season, he has had, I believe, a groin in his season and then a collarbone last year in his season. If he's healthy and he can go, like, I feel confident that when you say, all right, number two receiver, a guy that can be productive off of Nico, a guy that when they try to take away Nico can still have an answer and give an answer and be somebody that can be there for CJ, I feel comfortable with that. Because when he has been healthy in Jacksonville and even in Arizona before that, when he has been healthy, I mean, this has been a guy that's been between a 900-yard to 1,100-yard level receiver. And to me, that is a and he's not played with quarterbacks as good as CJ. All right. Now, again, the wild card is the coordinator and the play caller and everything else. But to me, if he's healthy, right, this is a guy's not 30. If he's healthy, I feel good about his production out of the slot. Now, I think it's a big deal is I think in some people's thoughts, it's hard for you to maybe be a two primarily playing in the slot. I think that may be something that may be something you're looking at is like it's hard. If I can't move you, if you just got to sit right there in one spot, that's hard to say you're a two. But for me, it's more of a health thing. I would be surprised, Clint, if he was healthy and he played 17 games this year and he wouldn't fit what they need.
I think he fits what they need. I think he will be a productive player. I think when teams, particularly when you play better defenses, particularly when games mean more late in the season, I think teams are going to do everything they can to take Nico Collins out of the game. I'm not comfortable with Christian Kirk being the guy that's going to rescue us from that. By himself. Right now, you got Christian Kirk, John Mechie, and Dalton Schultz. That ain't going to scare many.
Well, yeah. It can't be. Yeah, again, we agree. Like, they've got to add somebody else. But, like, right now, for an example, right now, if they brought in Amari Cooper, the Amari Cooper that is playing, the Amari Cooper that has played lately is not better than Christian Kirk. Like, the guy we saw last year that played, like, the guy.
Well, he didn't even play in Buffalo.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just saying, based off, I'm not talking about the guy who put 270 on the Texans, but the guy last year that was having a lot of, like, Shakir was the slot guy for them. He was more of the two. Like, that guy, it's not a definite that he would be better, but you would feel better with Nico, Kirk in the slot, and him.
No question.
Or if they drafted, if they drafted Matthew Golden, who may be climbing ahead of where they are, but they were to draft him, he wouldn't come in and be the number two, but those two together, you would feel better about it. Yeah, hell no, I'm not going to sit here and say, all right, man, they got Nico, and then on the other side of Christian Kirk and the inside is Xavier Hutchinson, and let's rock and roll. No, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, look, it's just you got to have somebody out there to compliment, and more importantly than the 1-2-3 conversation, you got to have somebody out there to compliment. I mean, Amari Cooper, look, I wouldn't touch Amari Cooper with a 10-foot pole if I'm not getting a healthy Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what the hell was going on last year in Buffalo, but if I don't get a guy that I feel like can go out there and run the route tree with the best of them, then I'm not touching him. I mean,
Mac Hollins was clearly better.
Well, I mean, he wasn't even on the field half the time.
No,
I mean, Amari wasn't on the field down the stretch. He literally wasn't on the field.
I think he caught one screen pass for 5 yards at the end of the game in the AFC Championship game. Like, yeah, they weren't using them. But, like someone said, draft Luther Burden III. Like, okay.
You use a first-round draft pick? Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would fill the void for damn sure.
But I
don't know that you need to do that. Like, I think it would be nice. I'm here for it. But, like, the guys I'm talking about, like, I'm talking about, like, a DJ Chark. Right, an outside receiver that's a little bit longer that can absolutely roll like that. That is the bottom. That's the floor for what you need to do. Yeah, hell, you go out and get you a first or second round receiver that's a top five or five to seven receiver coming out this year. Hell yeah, that's exactly that's well above what I'm talking about.
And that's just my thought. Is both of those? By the way, Gonzaga's up 23-3, Tyler. We're playing football out here with
that's what I got on in my studio. I'm loving it.
Good God Almighty! All right, but even those guys like a DJ Chark or Luther Burden coming in day one, you would not expect that they would be more productive than Christian Kirk. From what Christian Kirk is, maybe by the season, you know, you draft Luther Burden and he starts to impact the team the way that Xavier Worthy did towards the end of the year, and maybe, but you wouldn't come in day one thinking, all right, Luther Burden is our number two receiver, like over Christian, like he's going to be the guy that CJ will depend on to go to if they try to take away Nico. I think he'll probably be looking at Christian Kirk would be the guy you would think would be more productive. All right, what you got coming up at the four?
We'll get the Masters is right around the corner. We're going to change gears here. The Masters is right around the corner. This right up Tyler's alley for sure. Last year's winner, Scottie Scheffler, which, by the way, I started watching that
full swing.
Yeah, it's got me locked in. It's got me locked in. My wife had to tell me the last two nights, like, hey, if you think you're going to watch another episode, you're crazy in here. You have to go to the living room.
I love that amateur kid.
Yeah. It's a good watch, no doubt about it. But the Masters is right around the corner, and in the spirit of the Masters, Tyler had a great idea, and I went ahead and stole it. The Champions Dinner is where last year's winner gets to pick the menu.